Today's episode of Animation Aficionados is a bit unusual. For starters, we have about a 25-minute pre-show, the longest ever. If you want to skip ahead, you'll want to jump to about the 26-minute and 30-second mark. Also, we had some audio issues with my channel and a brief portion of Pablo's channel. Things have been cleaned up as best as they can, and I hope you enjoyed the show.
So how did you enjoy Return of the Animation?
It's pretty good.
Yeah, like I said, I never understood the people who bitch. Well, there's songs in it.
They're not bad songs, though.
Tolkien wrote songs for his, you know.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the music's a little repetitive, but it's not bad.
I know. You know, anyone who complains about music being in Lord of the Rings, I just have one thing to say to them. Far over the misty mountains cold, to dungeons deep and caverns old, we must away ere break of day to seek the pale enchanted gold. These are lyrics to a song that Tolkien himself wrote.
Oh, I see.
So yes, Tolkien and music go together like peas and carrots. Waiting for Pablo. Where's the Pablo? Pablo said he'll be here tonight. I emailed him to remind him. Oh, boy. So how's the... So it sounds like you're getting lots of yourself being stretched in all sorts of directions now.
Somewhat.
So what's going on with the duck?
Like, I don't really have the full scope of what's going on. So I don't know what the deal is with Platinum. I don't know why they're still dealing, why they owe them money at all.
I don't know.
No, we're going to buy the drunk duck, and then we're going to fuck him over, and then we're going to sell him off. They're just
looking all so it sounds like drunk duck was actually started by a hobbyist.
Yeah, it was started by another comic artist who just wanted to have his own
community.
A comic community, yeah. Because the very early days of drunk duck, you know, it was Dylan Squires and this guy who does God's Bark, Chuck Rawls. We were just going around and inviting people to come in.
Oh.
And that was the big attraction to Drunk Duck because, you know, Comic Genesis is kind of a sterile environment. You know, you
go to keen space back then.
Yeah, it you go to the forums, there are people there, but otherwise, you know, if you just stick to your own comic, there's no one's really gonna like
hang with you. I know.
No one's really gonna hang with you. But if you go to Drunk Duck, you know, there's like a family there, and that's the thing. I was invited to Drunk Duck.
I understand.
Still watching the tail end of Return of the King. It's not a perfect cartoon, but it's. I really like this animation and the. The background paintings are gorgeous.
Kitty Hawk's like, oh shit, that's today? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, you never said I could be on. I said, I totally did! Isn't it pretty much assumed if she has to be on the show, she's on it?
Pretty much.
Have you ever seen Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared?
No.
Okay. As a Muppet lover, I don't know how you'll feel about this.
What the fuck?
What? What's wrong with it?
It's just really bizarre.
It's almost Muppet-ish, kind
of. Yeah, it's a little Muppet-ish, but that's weird.
What?
No, just the very strange puppets.
Is the notebook talking yet?
It was talking, yeah.
Are they at the cloud yet?
I turned it off.
Oh, come on.
I told you, I'm still watching the end of Return of the King.
Okay, I'll let you watch the end of Return of the King. Should we do an episode on rejected cartoons?
As far as, like, give me an example of one.
My spoon is too big! The Academy Award nominated cartoons short Rejected Cartoons from 2000.
Oh.
Do you remember those now?
Not really.
My spoon is too big. I am a banana. Or he said, remember, it almost won an Academy Award. When you see it, remember that. And if anyone asks you why you think the Academy is a sham, tell them that. So, Neil, whenever you think of someone who actually went from YouTube famous to famous, who, what's the one name you think?
Sai, what's his name? The Gangnam style guy.
Actually, he was famous before then.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, he was big in Korea.
Well, yeah, but like we're talking like mainstream North American famous.
It's still, come on. It's, I mean, someone who in North America that went on YouTube and then went from YouTube famous to real famous.
I don't know.
Justin Bieber?
Really?
He started on YouTube, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he started as a 12-year-old kid who put videos of himself playing guitar, singing blues songs, until some rapper, quote-unquote, discovered him, and yeah.
Ah, I see.
Didn't know that, huh?
Did not know that.
Shocking?
Not entirely.
So the arts fiend is waging war against Sylvester Stallone.
Really? What for?
Because Sylvester Stallone started a Kickstarter to make a movie.
Okay.
I was expecting a little bit more than just a chuckling okay.
I have no opinion about Kickstarters. It's just like, you know, if Kickstarters do well for people, fine. If they fail, fine. No.
I know, but Kevin Smith said that, that you know, seeing big people who are starting to use, like Sylvester Stallone using Kickstarter sort of like takes away from what Kickstarter is supposed to be.
Maybe, maybe not. I don't really have that big of a take on it.
Okay.
I'm kind of just let things slide. Just, you know, whatever that's it will the, be, will be.
That's the future is our, not ours to see.
Wasn't breaking into song.
Well, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, you know, it's like, where there's a whip, there's a way.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, the hawk is coming soon. We now bring you our feature presentation.
Coming soon, to a podcast near you.
Dun, 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 dun. You should know which VHS I'm referencing there. Okay, it's a vague reference. It's Paramount in the 90s had every VHS whenever they had previews, and then right after that they said, you know.
See, your mistake was assuming that I didn't just fast forward.
Oh, I love quoting them while I'm waiting for the movie to start. You know, I'm waiting for the popcorn to pop, and I start quoting the previews along with them. Well, that's not a normal thing.
Well, it depends. I mean, you know, like Paramount previews, and especially the Disney previews, I would just fast forward through them. But you know, the one that was on the Batman VHS, I always like stopped to watch it.
Yeah, the new catalog.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, hello. Okay. So Neil, can we tell Kitty Hawk about the thing or not?
I'm sure we can, but it has to like stay secret. Well,
okay.
Okay.
What we know. Basically, Drunk Duck is and that's why when Cowboys and Aliens came out, I was like, that movie can eat a dick.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it's obvious that, like, well, I heard the story behind Cowboys and Aliens, and there part of me kind of, like, admires it just because it was like, we're going to do everything we can to get this made into a fucking movie.
And plus, it's Jon Favreau with Harrison Ford and...
Yeah. And it was... I don't know. I kind of fell asleep during it.
Yeah, I gotta admit, for such a strong concept with the star power they had, it does kind of suck.
Well, I mean, like, let's see. My father-in-law liked it, but I mean, I just was like, I don't know. It was not exactly what I was. I mean, the parts I remember were pretty cool. Like, I think I woke up for like the final battle, and it was, you know, not terrible, but definitely like. Oh, wow, this movie was not billed correctly.
Because what Platinum did is Platinum went into the webcomic space purely for the idea of buying, not buying, but stealing. Well, not stealing as much as finagling and tricking creators out of their intellectual property for just the movie rights and then going around selling the much more profitable movie rights to the studios.
Okay, what this really looks like, okay, this is just like me just delving into it for like 5 minutes, but yeah, this is basically what this looks like is that this was founded right about the time of the comic book crash, and this is basically a rating company. So, I mean, Rob Liefeld is involved in this as well. So, if Rob Liefeld is involved in this, this is rating.
No, that's not good. That's never good. But like I said, what Platinum does is they have these contracts that trick creators out of the movie rights of their properties, turn around and sell the movie rights. If they only sell like two movies ever, they made their money back and then some.
Well, oh my God, they have Megan Rose under them.
Yep.
Holy shit. Really? Yep. She works for them? All right. Okay. Well, like this really does look like what this is they were taking advantage of, like at the end of the big comics boom, they grabbed a whole bunch of people and basically said, you're not going to be able to survive without us.
Yeah.
And
like
also
I said,
then later then moved into, hey, you want fame and fortune. And then the drunk duck thing is just like, it's just 2000s rating culture.
Well, what the drunk duck thing was basically a giant ass grab, you know, both hands scooping as much, you know, IP for movie rights as possible.
Oh yeah,
and
definitely.
just so they could shift through and find one or two to sell to a studio, get those huge paydays when they sell a treatment to a studio, and that's the thing. You know, I talked to DJ Kaufman a lot.
Oh, and they also bought WeVault. I remember WeVault.
Yeah, but I talked to DJ Kaufman a lot when he was going through his legal issues with Platinum, with Hero by Night, and basically Platinum let him go and let him continue Hero by Night as a comic because and I told DJ he was a fool to accept this offer, but all DJ says, look, I'm tired, Ben. I just want to do a comic again. And he gave away the movie rights to Hero by Night. And that is – because that's the thing. If they make it a movie, then what Platinum can do is turn around and say, well, based off the movie version, here's our own comic of Hero by Night competing against DJ's version. And
yeah,
now
but how could he have fought him is like the question. You know, like seriously, like if they look like they have a bunch of like powerful people behind them.
I know, but I'm the kind of guy that would fight, and even if I know I'd lose, I'll still fight. I'm quixotic that way.
Yeah, well, there's also the issue of like in some states, if you lose everything, you will go to jail because there are states where debtor's prisons still exist. So that's the reason I wouldn't fight is because I know that no matter how hard I fight, I'm gonna get fucked, and that's partly the reason I've never entered a contract with any like major people, unless it's like a one time I create you one thing and then I'm out, because I don't want to get involved. It's just they will rape you eventually. So
understood. But like I said, it's I think I was just rooting for him because he had a lot of support around back then.
Yeah, I mean, I want to root for him too, but looking at like I'm just digging through. And I'm seeing who they've got behind them, and they've got all the major studios.
Right.
Like
I know.
they are a rating company, and it's just bullshit that they're going to drag down all of these like creators with them. And like, but that's how things are now. They feel that they can raid everything, and that's just whatever.
Yeah, that's the thing. The drunk duck community should jump ship and start something new.
Well, I mean, the issue is that like starting something new is going to be really hard.
Or just trot over to Comic Fury.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, they'll just go to whatever the next thing is, and then just this is what's been happening since the beginning of webcomics. I mean, I've seen so many like free services over the years come and go. That's just how it is. Cause
I think even Zuda doesn't screw you over as much as that.
Well, I mean, what happens is it's always the same story. they start out good, they're giving us good service, then they just get greedy, then they start like wanting more money, and they start buying up crap, and then they just get kind of like, then the ad revenue doesn't cover everything anymore. And
I think we see that story more than one place nowadays, if you get my meaning.
Yeah. I think what's and also, like, I've been reading studies on, like, how ads are just, like, it's just not working anymore.
I know.
Affiliate programs are honestly the thing to do.
Well, there's also, and also merchandising.
Well, more merchandising, yeah, I think what's happening is AdBlock has won and people are inoculated against ads.
Oh, did you hear about AdBlock's Kickstarter?
Yeah.
Neil, you know about AdBlock's Kickstarter?
I've seen it, yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure, because it's funny. It's very funny.
It is funny.
They want people to pay so they can get $1 million so they can have a Super Bowl ad. About AdBlock.
Okay.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah, I know.
It's funny.
I might actually look at this. I had heard about it. I hadn't looked at it. But if I could get like a t-shirt or something out of that, that might be worth it. Just to know that something stupid happened. Something so ephemeral as a Super Bowl commercial. 30 seconds. Yay! It's like the biggest firework ever.
Poof.
Yep, exactly.
You know what? I gotta be honest. It's before we start the show. I started watching Attack on Titan.
Mm.
It's visually beautiful and the story's good, but I don't know if I can keep watching it. There's just something about it that it's like Gantz all over again for me.
Well, like what's disturb? Is it something disturbing you?
It's just something that's because I've seen stuff with blood and gore and stuff like that, and that doesn't bother me. But it's just something it's sort of like that Gantz feeling. You know what I mean? Have you ever seen Gantz?
I read the manga a bit, but
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
that was
it's kind of like that Gantz feeling. It's like
I think the feeling honestly is that it's. The hopelessness of the series is what I enjoy. I enjoy the fact that, like, these people are fighting. It doesn't fucking matter. The other side is so much bigger. The other side has so much more resources. I mean, they're gigantic beings that just survive on the sun, and they can eat you. It's like, you're not going to win against that thing, but you can fucking fight it. That's all you can do. And I like that feeling because it's sort of like, I've noticed that the people who mostly like the series are like young Americans and young Japanese. And it's partly because they're sort of feeling that like something bigger than me, which can swallow me up. I can't really fight against it because it's bigger than me. I'm never going to be able to fight against it. So I think that's why most people like it. Cause it's sort of also that fulfillment of, cause like when they start getting the, you know, now I'm thinking about it, I'm blanking on it, but the equipment they use to fight, it's like a really great feeling when they actually kill a Titan. It's like, yeah, they fucking killed one of those things. Yeah. I don't know. I just like it because it's sort of fulfilling the whole fighting against something much bigger, but it's sort of, and you sort of see this in a lot of series now, the whole, you're fighting against something bigger, which will eventually just swallow you up, like Madoka.
Or like Berserk.
Yeah, and I think that's actually starting to catch on because there's sort of this feeling around the world amongst the youth that they're never going to really have the things their parents had. And so they feel this like hopelessness against something larger than them. So it's a lot of social commentary and shit like that. And I think that's why it's popular, is because people sort of get that message.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's also bloody as hell and fun to watch when Aaron. Oh man, later in the series. Oh man, when Aaron rages out, it's awesome. I don't know if you got to that part.
Yeah. Like I said, I tried watching it, and I got that Berserk / Gantz feeling. That's sort of like this. Yeah, I see it, but okay. Oh, here's a button to watch Dirty Pair.
Yeah, I guess I like series like where it's just I'm sorry, but it's hopeless, but you can keep fighting against it. It won't really, you won't win in the end, but you can keep fighting. And that's Madoka, really. Madoka is the, like the, it's the, oh, the magical girl hopelessness series. Yay!
Well, that in itself sounds very Quixotical.
It is very fun. It's a very, very fun series because it also, the magical girls, when they lose their minds, it's awesome.
And speaking of which, the movie that one director tried to make about Don Quixote actually was Quixotical in itself.
Which movie is that?
It's the one that he got like halfway done, and then he ran out of money and had to shut down. So he just took all the film of him making the movie, made a documentary about how he failed to make a movie.
Oh yeah! I think I saw that when I was like a kid or something like that.
No, it was kind of more recent than that. I think.
Let me think. When was that? Like what year?
Let me do a quick wiki knows all.
Okay, wasn't there like a 70s Don Quixote movie or something like that?
No, this is the one that didn't get made.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about there was a movie, and I've seen that one.
Wasn't there one with John Lithgow?
Yeah, I think there was, actually. And that's, let me see. There's been a couple of movies.
Oh, there was one that was attempted to be made by Orson Welles, but that's not the one I'm thinking of.
Okay, I remember the one from 1972.
Oh, actually, no, that's the one I am thinking about, because Jesus Franco took all the footage and made the documentary.
He wasn't what? Doing enough wine commercials to cover the budget.
Oh, yeah. I remember Orson Welles did a... let's see. Okay, here's the unfinished one. All right. No, I did see this.
Okay.
Yeah. But I forgot when I saw it. I've seen the 72 film.
So
that's the one I always remember.
So Neil, as you know, this ties back into animation because there was a Hanna-Barbera cartoon in the 90s called
Don Quixote. Don Coyote.
Don Coyote.
Yeah, which was I think that was Frank Welker doing the voice.
And what was the name of his sidekick?
It was vaguely racist, I know that. It was
Oh, the 90s. Panda. Last time you could be racist. God,
it was
Pandavia?
I know it was a panda. It is
Sancho Panda.
Yeah, that's it.
Yep. Man, that went for fucking 26 episodes?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, because everything
got 26 episodes. Oh, you can guess who voiced the panda, then. Neil. Don Messick.
Ah, yes.
Okay.
That would have been one of his last roles, wouldn't it?
That hurts a little bit, doesn't it?
Just a little.
Well, he played some other things. He could, you know.
He was in Pup Named Scooby Doo.
No, this is after Pup Named Scooby
Doo. Oh, yeah.
Oh, he was the alarm voice in the Andromeda Strain. Oh, man, the Jetsons movie. I forgot. Oh, my God.
Oh, that hurts. That hurts.
Yeah.
Wait. Oh, okay. So yeah, he was the voice of the kitchen narrator in House of Tomorrow.
Jetsons the movie, yeah. AKA Avatar.
Yeah. God damn it, Jetsons. I remember seeing Jetsons movie in the theater.
I think we're alone now.
Because I remember that one came out in July. Like it came out in June or July, so I got to see it around my birthday. And then DuckTales came out in August.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Speaking of the Jetsons movie, yeah. Kenya, did you ever see the documentary I Think We're Alone Now?
The what?
The documentary I Think We're Alone Now.
You've mentioned that one, yeah.
No, they are related.
But only tangentially, only because of Tiffany.
Yeah. I Think We're Alone Now is a documentary about a 50-something-year-old autistic man named, what's his name again, Neil?
I don't know. Jeffrey
or something like that?
I was trying to forget.
And how he stalked the pop singer Tiffany for like 20 years of his life.
Oh, yeah. You told me about that one. Yeah, that'd be fun.
It actually was fun to watch because it's like some people aren't born with filters, but they can be taught filters, but obviously he wasn't. And it's kind of
he was well I don't
Okay,
I thought the transgender person was a little scarier because
that person had
a poster, you know, that poster of like two girls in bed kissing.
Yes.
He, she, I don't know what stage of transition.
Mostly he still.
Yeah, he had a poster of that and the caption underneath it was "Me and Tiffany, this will happen very soon." And I was like, oh, restraining order right now, you.
And then talked about how, what happened to that person was he was in a car accident and was in a coma and had a dream about him being married to Tiffany as a woman. And then when he came out of the coma, he decided that has to become reality. I don't know what else you could really say to that because that's kind of like something wasn't quite screwed in right before.
Well, I mean, people get obsessed with something and then they start like convincing themselves. Like there are personality disorders that can lead to that. So
well, speaking of personality,
and if untreated.
Well, speaking of personality disorders, let's get this show started. Yeah. I don't think if Paul becomes midway, we'll just let him in. If not, then we will, you know.
Yeah,
I'll have to get Sally off.
So, that one, Sally Forth?
I was making an Army of Darkness.
I know.
Oh, okay. Oh, that stupid comic.
I had to work in a comic.
Right.
It's action. It's drama. It's comedy. It's Decian, the superhero webcomic. Decian has superhero antics and sexy girls. Catch updates weekly at Decian.com and NoSuperPants.com.
Hello and welcome again to Animation Aficionados. Tonight we are talking about two legendary animation studios working on the works of J.R.R. Tolkien. This is your host, Ben, joined by my co-host, TV's Mr. Neil.
Where there's a whip, there's a way.
And also with us is Kitty Hawk.
My precious!
All right, and as I said, we are talking about the works of J.R.R. Tolkien and Middle Earth, done by two animators. The two animators, of course, being Ralph Bakshi and Rankin Bass.
Technically three animators.
Well, yes, because, you know, because Jules Bass is one man, an epic man that goes out in the house wearing carrots.
There is no context to that picture. I don't know what the hell that's from.
I have no idea, but he's awesome for doing it. Yeah. And some of you who follow us on Twitter might have seen the tweet I made earlier a couple weeks ago where I had Ralph Bakshi talking to I did a weird photo comic where I had Ralph Bakshi talking to Jules Bass saying, you know, "Bass, why must we fight? We are not enemies." Neil, just insert the actual audio from the game right there.
Okay. Mega Man 8, everyone.
Yes. And the one thing is, Neil and I both recently rewatched Ralph Bakshi's Lord of the Rings, and
I tried to.
5 minutes before animation actually started.
Yeah. Although I will give it credit, I mean, it trucks right along. I mean, it has to because it covers both Fellowship and the Two Towers. But, 7 minutes in, it's got Gandalf talking to Bilbo, and I'm sure if you go to the Peter Jackson film, it's still in the prologue by that point. So
that's
at least stuff
true.
Moves along.
That's true, but and by the way, because of limitedness, we found a fan dub of it that made it a little bit more entertaining to watch.
Yeah, but I still couldn't make it through it.
And you do try, and that's the thing. The one thing I do have to say is it does come off as incredibly dry. It does. That's the one problem I always. Had I wouldn't even say it's a problem with Tolkien himself or his work because I've read Lord of the Rings and I've never found it to read as dry as the Bakshi interpretation, at least, you know, from the Shire to the Council of Elrond.
Yeah.
Felt because that actually is a big chunk of this movie. It's just that journey. you know, with the prancing pony and all that, getting to the count. That is a big chunk. That's at least one third of this movie. And the thing is, there's much more of a sense of fun in Peter Jackson's work, because you actually have some more personal moments, like when you have in the Peter Jackson film, you actually have a scene where Boromir is teaching the other hobbits how to fight with swords, and he's actually laughing and playing with them, and it's actually more of a almost sweet moment.
Yeah, but to keep in mind, like, this only had 132 minutes. This is only 132 minutes, and we're trying to fit two books into
that's true. But at the same time, it does feel very dry because part of it is the prose, the prose of the book. And if you, like, directly translate the prose of the book to spoken word, you lose some nuance that could be inferred when reading.
Yeah.
Because Aragorn comes off as very, I would say,
John Hurt himself.
Yes, it's a, not again.
Yeah.
But
I think you meant to say Aragorn. Aragorn being a very terrible book ending.
Aragorn,
pardon me, but he also looked very Native American.
He did.
which the fan dub did point out.
And
be racist.
The entire time I was just biting my lip, because I'm like, okay, every racist cartoon stereotype is coming back to me right now, and I dare not utter any of it.
Well, I think it's partly because this was rotoscoped, because it's backshot. I have a feeling that this is kind of like the EA game Lord of the Rings, where they basically took what they had around the office and said, okay, we're going to make costumes. And that's how they got the sprites for that game. And I imagine here it was, well, he's a hunter, right? We got some hunter stuff around the office. And it happened to just probably be, like, you know, skins used for, like, a Native American type outfit. So
it's more than that. It's this movie isn't just rotoscope. There's also lots of high contrast film. There's lots of live action in this.
Oh yeah. Well yeah. It's
back anytime. Here's how you could tell. If there's going to be a battle with, like, lots of people, it's probably a high-contrast film. If people are riding horses, it's high-contrast film.
Yep.
If something that's too difficult to describe is happening, it's high-contrast film, or still frames, or both.
It seems to be the only ones who are consistently animated, and I'm using...
Were the Hobbits.
Yeah, were the Hobbits and Gandalf. And even those are rotoscoped.
But that's probably because those characters, it seems with a lot, like, when it comes to, like, Bakshi's studio, if the animator who's assigned to that particular character is really in love with that character, then that character tends to be animated, like, really, really well. But if
And the guy who animated Gandalf, you could tell actually, like, loved Gandalf.
Yeah, and, like, you can tell that, in any of the movies. Like, in Wizards, I would say, like, there's the most love put in, because a lot of the characters move so well and all that. And here you can tell most of this was slog.
And one thing I got to say is you can tell the guy who animated Aragorn didn't give a fuck.
Yeah. It's pretty obvious that, like, we're basically hitting against the same thing when we talk about, like, the animation, we talk about how dry it is. This seems like this was just a slog for them.
Yeah, and the part of the thing is it's interesting how one written word can be interpreted so many different ways, because here, you know, Samwise Gamgee is shown to be, like, scrappy, I would say. Total scrappy, but he's mostly scrappy through this thing, where it's like, oh, yes, sir, Mr. Frodo, oh, yes, sir, Mr. It's very annoying, and you don't really feel that same thing, going back to Peter Jackson, when Rudy played him, then all of a sudden you have a feeling that, oh my God, Samwise Gamgee's a badass.
I think partly here it's the 70s might have creeped in a little bit, because, I mean, like, the scrappiness is sort of like the 70s. I mean, like, I'm reading, like, about some of the background of this, and it just seems like so many people tried to make this prior to Bakshi getting the rights.
Including the Beatles.
Including the Beatles, including Stanley Kubrick. I mean, it's
including
obvious.
Leonard Nimoy.
It seems like, what I think it looks like is that no one knew how exactly to do it. And Bakshi was willing to go first, basically say, I can do it. And he was not capable of doing it because there's no way you can fucking do The Lord of the Rings in 132 minutes. So he cut it down to two books. And even then you can't do it in 132 minutes. It took doing it as three movies that were like 2 hours each. And even then,
1.5.
Yeah. 2.5 each. And even then it's not complete, and it's not, and there are times when you're like, oh, this doesn't feel like, you know, completely satisfying. Because even though, like, the Lord of the Rings movies are really good, there are times when, when you feel kind of like, it's kind of unsatisfying. Whereas, like, in the new Hobbit movie, okay, that movie is 4 hours long, but my God, I felt satisfied by that movie. Like, there was enough content, and it kept going. Whereas, going back to Bakshi's, he's slogging. And
part of it is, like I said, the readings by the actors is a little dry as well.
Yeah.
And part of the thing is, you know, the studio told, you know, Bakshi, you know, you have to call Saruman Aroman because Saruman sounds like Sauron and you might confuse people.
Oh.
And then the actor forgets that.
Yeah.
I am Aroman. No, I am Saruman of many colors with my technicolor dream coat that I stole from Joseph.
This is Bakshi we're talking about. This is going to be fast and loose. This is
I know, but some of the things that cracked me up about this was Saruman's staff looked like a fucking table leg.
I know, and like I said, things around the office. It's obvious.
Probably was.
Costumes. I mean, it's obvious from the costumes that this is the same trick that like later people would use for video games, where you just take what's around the office, and even like early animation, they did this. You take what's around the office, you rotoscope it, you kind of add a little bit of detail when you put it into the animation. But yeah, for all we know, like, Gandalf could have been wearing like a traffic cone.
Speaking of video games and the animation, some of the goofier animation was starting to remind me of the Zelda CDI games.
Oh, can't God, wait
to
yeah.
The dongos.
Oh, God.
I'm so hungry I could eat a Dr. Rock. But yeah, it's Neil's right in that of course, that the animation does start playing a little loose the longer it goes on, because some of the best animation actually was back where Frodo was talking with Gandalf at the Shire. The milking the cow animation that actually was happening where they were having this conversation, walking up and down a bridge, talking, you know, Frodo throws a stone and all this stuff that they were supposed to have this conversation in Frodo's house. But they moved it outside where they're walking around doing milk the cow animation. But that still is the best animation, this whole damn thing. And that's kind of funny to me because it was totally unnecessary. And I can understand why, because talking head animation is so totally Filmation and bad. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it's...
Yeah, that wasn't really getting to me, but like later in the film where Frodo's on a horse and Aragorn's next to the horse, he's talking to him. It was starting to drive me nuts then, because like no one was able to stay still in the frame. They were like rocking back and forth. I'm like, ah, goddamn this animation. Or I'm sorry, rotoscope. Because
actually, yeah, excuse you, high contrast film painted over.
Yeah,
yeah.
But really, the one thing that we have to bring up now is pow. Okay, imagine this is how you know J.R.R. Tolkien described the Balrog one certain way. Let me actually pull up the quote while we're here, so we can make sure that we got it right. You know, Balrog, not the Street Fighter character Balrog from Lord of the Rings, because Balrog could be one of three Street Fighter characters.
Two, the boxer or the guy with the ball.
Yeah. Dun, 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 dun. Okay, let's see. But yeah, in the way the Tolkien described the Balrog was a creature of fire and shadow, whose wings filled the doorways, and that had a fiery sword and a whip.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, I gotta be honest, reading that description, you know, Peter Jackson is so far the only one who got it right. And when you watch the J.R.R. Tolkien, you know, as interpreted by Ralph Bakshi, what you got instead was a guy in high contrast film wearing a lion's head with butterfly wings and trash bags tied over his legs.
Yep. Because that's what they have lying around.
I'm going to be generous and say that they kind of look like fuzzy slippers. Because my sister had a pair of fuzzy slippers that looked like monster meat, and that's what it kind of looks like.
well, the point remains is that there's a clip on YouTube called The Unscary Balrog.
Yeah.
And there are people who made comments, and I left some comments there on there too, so you'll see my name there. But people left comments saying, "Oh my god, this is great, just like, you know, just like J.R.R. Tolkien envisioned." I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure he thought he when he described the creature of shadow and flame, he didn't think of a guy with a lion's head, butterfly wings, and trash bags tied around his legs.
I know, but welcome to the internet. People say stupid things everywhere.
I know.
I just kind of see that and I let it go.
Damn it, Neil, I can't let these things go. Okay. but yeah, the actual battle is, what's really funny is after, you know, Gandalf falls and shouts, "Fly, you fools," when they found Gandalf the White in the forest, and I gotta say that this scene is so undramatically done in the cartoon. It's doesn't have anywhere near the same sense of peril that the other versions did. And you know, when Gandalf recounts his fight with the Balrog, the way they did it was just still images that they rocked back and forth under the camera. I mean, it's like, aren't you going to show like this epic battle between Gandalf and the Balrog? You know, two of the Maiai, you know, in corporeal form fighting. It's okay. Yeah, now I'm starting to go into the thick mythology of Lord of the Rings that most people don't even know about.
What I love about that Balrog is that it flies through the air and then it lands, and it's clearly like a 180-pound guy, but it lands with this huge thud, and they shake the camera when it lands. It's hilarious.
The scene is the funniest part of Lord of the Rings. It really is. And you know, and like I said, if you've seen the Peter Jackson movies, you pretty much know how things go after this. You know, they you know, Boromir gets shot by a dozen arrows. Boromir's a Viking in this for some reason. And has his final epic stand to vindicate himself for his earlier treachery of trying to take the One Ring from Frodo. And Merry and Pippin are abducted. They go to Rohan, you know, Battle of Helm's Deep, and Anthony Daniels, C-3PO, is Legolas. And it's the final charge where Gandalf charges in. I think there was actually more budget for Ralph Bakshi to rent horses and riders.
He actually had, since they were filming a lot of this in Spain, I think they had run out of budget at that point.
Like, yeah, because the final shot of Gandalf riding in the battle, leading the riders of Rohan against the orcs, it's pretty much all just high contrast film, and you see an actor wearing a Gandalf costume riding down the hill with all these other horsemen riding behind him and his hat tied like by a string around his neck flying, you know, fluttering behind him. And it's actually really weird to watch. It's like, oh yeah, this is high contrast film. And you know, this is still something to trudge through because the prose is so dry. The translation of it is it's not even really much of a translation. But at the same time, there are things that Bakshi added to the modern Lord of the Rings mythos very minor, but there are things he added, like in the scene in the Prancing Pony Inn, where you have the ringwraith stabbing the beds. That was originally only in Bakshi's animated film.
Yeah,
that was not in the book, and Peter Jackson put that in his movie.
Peter Jackson made more than one homage to the Ralph Bakshi cartoon in the Lord of the Rings. I mean, there's one shot in the Shire where there's the guy with his foot up on the table, and he copied that shot in Fellowship.
Where he flexes his toes.
Yeah, he wiggles his toes, and I don't think he does it in the Peter Jackson movie. That's the same shot.
But let's move on to the other animated thingy.
Oh,
yes.
This is so
funny. Where there's a whip, there's a way.
This is like the sun coming out.
Oh, hold on. Pablo is here.
Okay. The sun's coming out after a long storm. A 2.5 hour storm, to be precise.
Morning has broken like the first morning.
Hello?
Hello, hello.
Hey, hey.
Did Skype update again? Hey there, Kitty Hook. Hey there, you.
Yeah, so it's Pablo, you came in a little bit late, but we were just finishing up Ralph Bakshi's Lord of the Rings. Did you have any thoughts on it?
Oh, yes, I do, because I actually did a small, you know, rewatch of it earlier today. And I recall exactly the same scenes that made me not watch it at all back when I was a kid. The first 5 minutes.
No animation.
No animation whatsoever. I remember I was a kid and I rented this VHS, you know, Lord of the Rings, and this awesome, you know, Frank Frazetta style painting with Gandalf, pointed out with a giant sword.
With Glamdring. The sword is Glamdring.
And you know,
I'm not a nerd. I'm not a nerd.
No, you're not. And I was like, this is going to be the best movie ever. And then I put the VHS on. And first of all, it wasn't dubbed in Spanish. It was, you know, still speaking in English. So it had subtitles. So it was like, you know, I was like 4 or 5 years old. And I was like, I gotta read. And the movie begins. Not only do I have to read, I'm only seeing, you know, shadows of people acting against a red backdrop. And I'm like, this ain't cartoons. and those were, you know, five whole minutes of, you know, just people acting quite not well, to be, you know, sort of kind with them. So I just pressed the eject button and I stayed away from any other Lord of the Rings adaptations as I was a kid, because it was like, no, oh, that's a boring thing where I have to read and it's not even cartoons. And so I never actually found out of the Rankin Bass version. And I only found out about it, you know, like 20 years later when we started talking about it on Animation Aficionados. And I was like, wait a minute, this is like Thundercats. Only it's Lord of the Rings.
It's like
wow.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. And it's also, it ceases the animation compared to Bakshi's, because the one good thing that we gotta say about Bakshi is that it got made, sort of.
Well, I mean, considering like how many times they tried to make it prior to him, at least he made it. Gotta say that.
But at the same time, I gotta agree with Pablo. It does feel like it's like 75% done when they released it. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I think they wanted to do the whole thing. It really feels like that.
Even then, what they released still feels about 75% done.
Well, that's Bakshi for you. I mean, it's always going to be looking a little unfinished. I mean, I love Bakshi, and I understand what I'm getting into when I watch his stuff. It's going to be unfinished. It's going to be slapshot. There's going to be a lot of live action interspersed. But, I mean, I'm there mostly because the moments of really good animation make it worth it, you know? Like, some the animation in Wizards, like, there's some animation in there, especially, like, the fairy. That's fine. Or, like, you know, Fritz and his friend. That's what makes it worth it to me. Now, That said, The Lord of the Rings doesn't actually have a lot of that, because this feels more like, oh, yay, we get to make it. Oh, God, this is going to suck.
What I love is Kitty Hawk is when you said, yeah, Wizards, it had some animation in there.
I mean, it does. I mean, I like Wizards mostly because I like the concepts in it, and the ending is really good. And like I said, there isn't a lot of animation, but I would recommend it. Lord of the Rings, I'm not going to recommend that.
Wizards actually has real, genuine animation in it.
You can feel that some people really were in love with the parts that they were doing. Whereas in Lord of the Rings, there's not a lot of love. Yep. It's obvious that the love, whatever love was in there, was filmed in the beginning. And then as they got through it, it became more and more obvious that this was just a slog. And I think they were just trudging through. Yeah, they just probably just started like going, okay, let's just get this done. Let's just get this done. Let's just get this done.
Well, to contrast it more with Wizards, there was actually stuff where people just sat down and drew shit. Whereas in Lord of the Rings, I can't think of a single cell anywhere in the cartoon that was actually drawn. It's all traced.
According to what I've read, all of it
there's
is...
something. There's like Gandalf mostly.
No, he's rotoscoped.
He needed to be drawn.
Yeah, but he was rotoscoped.
Yeah, but in some of them was, you know, like full
animation.
That, but on the it's all rotoscoped, but at least it's rotoscoped. I mean, some parties like you just walked into, you know, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, one of the Terry Gilliam animation sections, because it's like if you actually watch it, you know, like real fast, you would think that Lord of the Rings is about this small group of cartoon characters that are constantly being attacked by live action characters.
But Pablo, before we move on to the Rankin Bass, tell us your thoughts on the Balrog.
What is there to say that has been said before? Seriously, and that's one of the things that I gotta compare with the Rankin Bass version a lot, because, you know, for instance, the Lich King. The Lich King, for instance, he's like... In the Rankin Bass version, it's these two glowing eyes and this floating crown. You know, it's not something you see every day. They actually said, okay, we're going to draw this giant dragon. We're going to draw this character. It's impossible to exist and all of that. But when it came to the bar, it's just this guy with his trash bags tied to his feet. And
Pablo?
Hello?
Pablo?
It's just sad, you know, but seriously, I think we've gone to extent before. Still here? Can't hear me?
Yeah.
Well, that's it. I mean, it just sucks.
Yeah. So moving on to the...
It's like, and there's this monster here. They didn't behind that. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, so to Rankin Bass, that's to the land of more animation and where everyone is Jewish.
They're not Jewish. Just because they have big noses.
God damn it, Ben.
That's called style, Ben. I love those big noses.
Yeah. No, actually, the style is very beautiful. I just had to throw in a joke.
God damn it, Ben.
And then you're going to go and, you know, give a small... talk about how Dick Wolf's shirts are the best thing out there, right?
Yeah.
Go, Dick Wolves!
And you're going to go and start working for DC Comics and make their whole draw this beautiful woman naked committing suicide.
And also, let's make Amanda Waller's, like, thin and not look black anymore. Yeah.
And let's forbid marriage on our only lesbian book.
Oh yeah.
Well, I love lesbians.
To be fair, they're actually against marriage in general.
Yeah.
but let's make one thing clear. I like lesbians just like anyone, but why won't lesbians love me?
Good job.
There's something between your legs that they just don't want.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls.
Do you like retro shows? Did you grow up in either the 80s or the 90s? Then tune into Telecast, GeekCastRadio.com's newest podcast. Join us here on the Telecast as we revisit some of your favorite shows, such as Clarissa Explains It All, Salute Your Shorts, Saved by the Bell, and much, much more, only on GeekCastRadio.com.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the Internet's number one and longest-running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Adkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the GeekCast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Good. No.
What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
I command the jaw bridge. Open!
Yes, that's right. We have traveled to Eternia to enter Castle Grayskull. Join Optimus Solo and TFJ Mike as they find themselves telling tales of Eternia. We cover all things He-Man in this 45-episode-long podcast. You can find us on iTunes and www.geekcastradio.com. By the power of Grayskull, we all have the power.
And now, back to the show.
But, yeah, no, Reagan Bass, other than like a nose joke, actually the animation is gorgeous. And the one thing that people give it shit for is the music. And I think, you know, the one thing that I have to say to people who bitch about, oh, no, there's music in this J.R.R. Tolkien interpretation all I have to say is this, you know, far over the misty mountains cold to dungeons deep and caverns old. He wrote songs for Lord of the Rings.
I know.
Yeah. That's what I gotta say to people.
Some people complain it's way too modern.
Too modern. Well,
no. All I'm gonna say about that it's a Knight's Tale.
Oh God damn it, a Knight's Tale. But it's not really like okay. It is a bit. I guess would be considered a little modern, like considering like what Tolkien was originally going for. But okay. It's the
they're playing lutes though.
It's the 70s, and this was the interpretation of folk music in the 70s. Like a lot of people need to put themselves in that mindset. Like,
but even then, they're playing lutes. It's not like they're singing Rocky Mountain High, Colorado.
It's more the composition. It's more modern than like say what Tolkien was originally thinking. But here's the other thing, like. It's not that big a deal. It's of the 70s folk tradition. I actually like it. And I think the people who are raging about the music are the type of people who want Superman to be super dark and brooding. These are people that don't have any joy in their hearts. You know?
I gotta agree. It's because the thing is, this actually does get pretty dark. This interpretation does get pretty dark, even though if they don't show like people being really honestly stabbed and they like cut away from some of the more violent bits. This does get pretty dark and dire, and you know, this does also keep some of the things that the Baxter interpretation does, because Samwise is still being interpreted as like a little bit of a doofus here.
Yeah.
He is, but he's a lot more tolerable here.
And that's true. He is a lot better than yes, sir, Mr. Frodo, sir. He's a lot better than that.
And like this version, I would say this version isn't annoying. Like, I've heard the BBC reading of the book. Like, have you ever listened to the whole, it's like fucking like 40 tapes long.
Oh,
it is the BBC, like, it's like a radio play of the books. And
I've heard and seen other BBC productions of other British literature.
Yeah.
Including the talking about J.R.R.'s J.R. Tolkien's best friend growing up, I also saw the BBC's live action as bad as that was, that actually had more heart in it than the damn Hollywood movie.
No, I'm not, the production values are not what I'm against.
I'm talking about the radio play one that they did. It's like 40 tapes long. This was back when I only listened to it back when it was on cassette. And the thing is that it has really great, like the actors are really great and everything like that. But I would say that the Rankin Bass one, like the music in it, is just fine compared to even the BBC version. That's my point. My point is like people just need to stop going off on it. And I always loved the Rankin Bass, like the movies. They were just, the animation was really good. And I had a poster actually of like, you know, that watercolor look that they had for when they were doing the character designs. You know,
yeah, and
the actual
stuff, the animation itself is good. It's on, yeah. You know, I'm not going to say it's directly on par with the absolute best that Bakshi ever did, but as a whole, it does. I think the animation does beat
the Rankin Bass, but the character designs are what I always remember because like I had the poster, and I had I think I had the record too because I remember I had a book with like. It had like all the character designs in it. It's something with character designs, and it had a little bit of the story. And I think it was an album. And I remember like the watercolor character designs were what I really enjoyed because like these were they were even scarier looking than what they looked like in the cartoon.
Yeah.
So like years later, when I rewatched the cartoon, I was like, "This is totally not what I remembered," and I was kind of let down because. I remember those gorgeous watercolor character designs that they did, that style that everyone had in the late 70s.
But like I said, this actually does hit some of the better storytelling points in Lord of the Rings, because my favorite shit in Lord of the Rings isn't Fellowship. It's like the second half of Two Towers to Return of the King is my favorite parts of the saga.
Well, and, you're getting more into it is the thing.
Yeah, and the perfect example of this is number one. I have to say I do like the more inhuman look that Gollum has in the Rankin Bass interpretation versus the Ralph Bakshi interpretation. I like the fact that he doesn't even look like he could be remotely human anymore.
Yeah, he looks like a frog almost.
Yeah, he looks that corrupted now, and I think that sort of helps with it because if you have him look, you know, nothing against. Peter Jackson's Smeagol Gollum because Andy, what's his name, did a fantastic job of interpreting him.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in animation, you can do stuff like that. Draw something that doesn't look human.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest strengths I think that the Rankin Bass one had over the Ralph Bakshi. When they could draw something that doesn't look human, they draw something that doesn't look human. And
but I think like in the Peter Jackson one, I think they wanted to show how well they could map facial the facial recognition. It was mostly a showing off sort of thing than it was an animation, because like the other creatures that they showed that they could make like creatures that don't look like anything that exists on Earth. I think for Gollum, they were just trying to show like, hey, look at this. We're awesome. We're awesome at this. You should hire us.
There's also another thing going for them. That is that, both in the Peter Jackson movie and also the Bakshi interpretation, since they are covering, you know, both Fellowship and the Two Towers, they actually have this whole sequence where you have to actually care for Gollum. Because you gotta empathize with him a bit, feel a bit sorry for him. So there isn't. Maybe if they went with something way too inhumane, you wouldn't be able to relate to him as much. Meanwhile, the Rankin Bass version, since it's only covering Return of the Rings, it's just like he just shows up basically to be an antagonist. And it's also the antagonist in The Hobbit, because, you know, the Return of the Rings is actually a sequel to The Hobbit for them. They actually went with, like, it's this enemy, so he has to be, you know, a monster, and that's it. Meanwhile, in both the Peter Jackson and Ralph Bakshi versions, you actually have to care for him a bit. So I can understand why David the M would.
Go. He kind of looks cute in the Rankin Bass version. And the reason I say that is the eyes and the monkey ears are sort of adorable. You know, like he does have like a frog-like mouth, and that kind of makes him look inhuman. But the big eyes and the little monkey ears are kind of cute looking. So he does look adorable. You know, like the Rankin Bass makes him look cute compared to the character designs that they originally did of these characters.
And personally, I think that, you know, one of the songs like Frodo of the Nine Fingers is actually a really nice framing device for this. Because the funny thing is there are two people that are in animation that live in Colorado that love the Rankin Bass interpretation of Lord of the Rings so much that they actually came up with a bit of a gag. I think everyone knows what I'm talking about.
Yep.
A great adventure. Lemmy Winks. When I first saw that on South Park, I was like, whoa. But
the return of the rings, the return of the king to the two towers, the return of the fellowship of the ring to the two towers. That was the South Park Lord of the Rings parody episode.
No. The one I'm talking about is the adventure of Lemmy Winks.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Okay, and what happened was it was the episode about gay tolerance. Where what happened was the school hamster Lemmy Winks was stuck in Mr. Slave's ass, and he has to journey from the sphincter back to the esophagus to escape and live, and he is joined by the spirits of the Sparrow Prince, the Frog King, and the Catatafish to answer riddles on his journey. And they sing Matt Stone and Trey Parker sing songs like the Rankin Bass Lord of the Rings about Lemmy Winks' journey.
I gotta find that episode.
In a gay man's ass. And you spell that Lemmy Winks, Lemm. You know, Iwinks, Lemmy Winks. Okay, yeah. SouthParkStudios.com. They have all the episodes free to watch. And the point is...
I love Seth MacFarlane's line about South Park. It's always been my favorite. The cutaways and flashbacks have nothing to do with the story. They're just there to be funny. This is a shallow indulgence that South Park is quite above. And I salute them. Talking about, I'm sorry, South Park had stopped being funny a long time ago. That's why I don't know that episode.
Like, no, that episode was one of the earlier seasons.
Yeah, and it was like after Scott Timmerman Must Die, though. So, and I, that's actually the point at which I just say, it just went into crazy land and I was out of there. It's kind of like, you know, after season 3 of Futurama. It's like, no, thank you.
Okay, you got a point there, but...
getting back to Rankin Bass... So, but the thing I always remember of Rankin Bass is like The Hobbit more so than the Return of the King, because like The Hobbit is the one that like always aired on Disney, which is part of the reason that people thought Disney had the rights to Lord of the Rings for so long.
But to me, the thing, it's not The Hobbit. I've watched Return of the King far more times than The Hobbit.
I've watched The Hobbit a hell of a lot more. It aired more on Disney and HBO, whereas I think
I didn't grow up with cable.
Well, my dad, we moved around a lot, and that was the only thing we had that we could keep with us, so cable was great, because we couldn't keep a lot of books or anything. So,
well, I didn't grow up with cable, so yeah.
Cable television, but, The Hobbit definitely was more common.
Yeah, The Return of the King was, like, aired on ABC, so it was probably, like, the reason it probably didn't get aired a lot is probably due to, like, the way the rights were. It was Warner Brothers ultimately who owns it, but it might have aired on HBO, but like we stopped getting HBO probably like in the 90s because that's about the time that they started really raising the price on it. So I never really saw Return of the King. Like I think I only saw it like a couple of times maybe growing up. And one of the times was on video.
Warner Brothers actually owns all the movies now, and they
oh, okay.
Every now and then they come out in like a three movie trilogy box set, even though
yeah,
technically
yeah.
they're not related.
Yeah,
well,
but
they're
but,
sort of related. Yeah, the voice actors actually did return from the Bakshi version to the Rankin Bass version.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
At least that's what Wikipedia say, because remember, I didn't know anything about this till recently.
Nah.
But I did read the same thing, that they do release them as sort of like a DVD trilogy.
The funny thing is Cartoon Network, like right when the Lord of the Rings fever was happening, Cartoon Network said they were going to show all the Lord of the Rings animated movies together, and they showed back-to-back Ralph Bakshi's Lord of the Rings, like and Rankin Bass's Return of the King, like back to back, and talk about thermal shock.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like the Warner Brothers considers them to be like in the same set, and it's partly because like part of the reason that Warner Brothers bought all of the movies was because they needed them in order to make The Hobbit. Like, it was a rights issue. If they didn't buy it, then they couldn't make the movie. So it was like, and they also like had to say that they were part of the same universe in order to get the rights all in the right place, probably. It sounds like one of those, and if I cast the magic spell, then the copyright will be correct.
Yes, and one thing I gotta say is it's definitely, you can definitely see something in the J.R.R. Tolkien's work is like, to me, a lot of the major MacGuffins in the end of Two Towers and beginning of most of Return of the King is based off of the fact that, I think I've mentioned this in other shows or possibly other podcasts, is J.R.R. Tolkien giving the big fat middle finger to William Shakespeare.
That was great, yeah. I've actually used
because what happened was J.R.R. Tolkien told a story about how he went to see Macbeth, the play Macbeth.
Yeah.
And there was a prophecy Macbeth's throne will not be challenged until the forest moves. And J.R.R. Tolkien says he was a child and he was so disappointed when what that meant was a bunch of actors crossing the stage with leaves in their hats. And so he's like, okay, I'm writing this story. I'm going to have fucking trees march.
Yes.
The march of the ants. And then the whole Macbeth, you know, I cannot be killed by any man, woman born. And Macbeth's and J.R.R. Tolkien is like, okay, so C-section doesn't count. Okay, that's a cop out. I'm going to have a woman fucking kill the guy who says that no man can kill him.
Well, I mean, there is a lot of worship of William Shakespeare in like any, I would say pretty much any English speaking country. Like, God knows, like going through high school, it was nothing but let's suck Shakespeare's cock.
I know, but like I said, it's just so funny to me that some of the biggest story points in Lord of the Rings is Tolkien saying fuck you to Shakespeare.
I can imagine it's worse in Britain. And I can imagine, you know, he was like, yeah, okay, so some dude who lived, like, over 400 years ago is the most awesomest person ever. Funk that!
And now with the internet, we're doing that same process, only faster.
Exactly.
It's like, what, this is the new thing? Well, I can do it way better.
Exactly!
And speaking of which, you know, the Witch King fight with Eowyn, you know, the Witch King, for people who watch this the first time, no, it's not Chris Lauda, it's Alan Oppenheimer.
It is not, it's John Stevenson.
Oh, damn, I'm wrong.
I could pick it out right away. I'm like, that guy's voice, I catch him in every cartoon he's in, because he's got this voice where he's like, every time I talk, I sound like this, Flintstone, you know, you always know when it's him.
Okay, but it does sound almost Lada-esque.
It is a bit Lada-esque.
And that's also one of the most non-violent deaths in the whole movie.
Because he cuts his energy eyes in his non-existent head.
Yeah.
So, yes.
And then he just, you know, deflates.
Yes. The clothes deflate like a force ghost.
Yeah.
And but like I said, it's actually quite interesting to watch because
because Thundercats.
Yeah, because of yeah, you're right. Because Thundercats.
Yeah. Well, it's like half Japanese animation anyway.
It is. It's beautiful animation, and of course, you know, where there's a whip, there's a way.
And plus, you have these beautiful watercolor backgrounds everywhere.
Yeah,
it's a stark contrast from all the high contrast bullshit that's in the backsheet.
Well, this is actually like a little earlier, so it's like that nice 70s, like the nice 70s watercolor look. As we said, there's definitely they used Topcraft for their animation. So we're talking about the people that had Miyazaki, Takahata, produced Nazca, you know, they helped with Macross, Do You Remember Love? I mean, this was like star power animation for something that was like considered low budget at the time.
It's a TV movie.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it was just because this was about the time that America discovered Japanese animation and was starting to use it, much in the way, like, you know, the progression has gone from Americans using Japanese to Japanese using Koreans, and now Koreans are using Southeast Asians or something like that.
And, well, I think this is when studios discover Japanese.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, Rankin-Bass, it's obvious that, well, Rankin-Bass actually has a history of using Japanese studios, like,
Exactly. And they were always one of the first studios that got consistent results.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They've always worked hard to strive for that. I mean, the Rankin-Bass you know, the early Rankin-Bass works are always good, and I'm always a big fan of what Rankin-Bass puts out. And
was it Thundercats Rankin-Bass?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it was Rankin-Bass. Yeah. And also
was Tiger
and
Sharks.
It was also Topcraft. Topcraft was the animation studio behind it. So,
you know, Tiger Sharks and Silver Hawks and
they actually lucked out in getting Topcraft, because if it hadn't been for the animators being kind of angry about how things were going over at Toei Animation, they would like Topcraft wouldn't have been formed, and Rankin-Bass wouldn't have gotten a hold of this. They wouldn't have been, and like that's the reason like that partnership was formed so early on, was because both studios were young and willing to try this out. Whereas, you know, in the 80s, like, even larger studios started partnering up with Japanese studios.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so was that other one that Rankin-Bass did, you know, Adjective Animal.
Yeah. And it seems like they were really, yeah, but unfortunately it didn't really, their relationship doesn't seem to have lasted very long, probably because they were outspent.
When you had other big studios starting to like pay Japanese studios, there's only so many hands the animators have at one time
that they could
devote to it, plus their own, you know, domestic work, and it's like you know, it's the whole part of we're profitable right now, but we need more people. If we get more people, we won't be as profitable. Da 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 da. Well, that's just how business works.
It looks like their death was actually mostly due to the fact that they had switched over mostly to Japanese animators. Like, in a way, they discovered this new great way of doing work, but in another sense, it killed them because they didn't really have any domestic animators anymore. And so, like, they did Thundercats, Silverhawks. And then they did the comic strip, which no one remembers, which had Street Frogs, Mini Monsters, Karate Cat, and Tiger Sharks. All your favorite characters.
Adjective Animal.
Oh, yes, exactly. So, yeah, it's Rankin-Bass, great studio, discovered great Japanese animators who ended up leaving and becoming greater animators.
So if you ask me which one I prefer, Rankin-Bass or Ralph Bakshi, for Tolkien, I'll just have one thing to say. It's which one had Frodo actually lose a finger?
Yeah. Well, and also, I know, like, this isn't Lord of the Rings, it's like Hobbit, but Smaug has always been one of my favorite like character designs out of
oh god yes
out of
oh,
all
god,
of
yes.
them. So I've got to go with Rankin Bass like all the way, because I'm sorry, like Bakshi was trying, but it's obvious that he kind of lost heart halfway through, and it's unfortunate. And also he regretted going for the rotoscope look, which ended up looking like, well, ass.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm sorry, Rankin Bass. They had a better team. They planned this out a little better. They decided not to try to do all three books, and then end up just only doing two.
Yeah. Well. You know what? It's you know, sometimes I think Ralph Bakshi's a man whose vision gets too large for what he's doing.
Yeah.
I mean, a good example of this is. And sometimes I think he has a bit of an ego, and I think anyone who's a creator at that level does have an ego. I'm not saying that is a bad thing, but it's a fact, and I think we can all agree on that. A good example of this ego is he totally hated the Johnny Depp Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, because he insisted that he wanted to do an animated version of that, and he insisted that there was no way they could do a faithful live-action version of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Well... Yeah, I can kind of see that, but sorry, Bakshi, you didn't do it. And also, like, I mean, he has a project he's been doing for like a Kickstarter recently. Wasn't it like he wants to do like this New York documentary? And
yes.
And I'm interested in it because actually I am interested in like the history of New York, and it would be interesting to see like the history in the 60s and 70s. But my only the only fear I had about it was, how dedicated was he going to be to the project? Like, I love Ralph Bakshi, but we are basically hitting against the same thing. The same thing that always happens with his stuff. Is he going to love it the whole way through?
Yeah, I think part of the problem is he has some that creative ADHD where midway through he gets this interest and he's like, oh, just finish it up. I want to do something else now.
That's why he's best when he has a lot of people working underneath him. Like, you know, like he's good at delegating out jobs, and his issue is that if he can delegate enough of the work out that it's done fast enough, I think it's actually good. But his problem,
I can agree with that.
Like Mighty Mouse the New Adventures.
Yeah.
I think that it's also the whole though. If he does have complete control all through, because for instance, the whole Cool World thing, and also, you know,
oh god, Cool World was a quagmire.
Because keeps you know, if people start getting in the way and other factors like money come in and stuff like that. It's something that, of course, is going to alter the final product. I've been in animated productions that had a deadline and stuff just started falling apart because, you know, budget is this, or deadline is that, and the product has to be done by such date. And one starts to lose interest in it because, you know, it just can't be as good as you wish it was, and sometimes you just give up and say, okay, fuck this, this is just as good as it gets, and it's sad because, you know, it's a wasted opportunity, and I've seen that in many animated productions, and I know that Bakshi went through that with many options.
Well,
so,
I mean, they talk...
Well,
they talk about it in the Wikipedia article about how he spent a lot of money on the Spain locations, like, in the early part of the production. So, yeah, it does look like money was also an issue here. So, and that's poor planning, and that's poor planning on his part and the studio's part, because that's something like that should have been worked out from the beginning, but it looks like they were being very like loose with everything. And it was right after Fritz the Cat. So I can imagine that the studio was like, oh, Fritz the Cat was like a huge success. How could this go wrong? And it's like,
so they gave him carte blanche, and then they gave him too much.
Yeah. What happened is they said, dude, you got all the money. And then like probably halfway through, they were like, well, where's everything? And he's like, we're still working on it. And I can imagine how that went down. And like, that's just, you know, it's going to be a bad time. But at the same time,
I wish that someone took 8 millimeter shots of just around the studio and around when they were just working, because that would make a great documentary, like on the level of Heart of Darkness, A Filmmaker's Apocalypse, I think. Because I think it's a very similar story of given too much money, too much control, and thrown in a foreign location, and oh my God, what do we do now?
Tropic Thunder.
No, but have you ever seen Heart of Darkness, A Filmmaker's Apocalypse?
Nope. I did see Lost in La Mancha, though.
Okay, that's one of the best. That's one of the best documentaries of the making of a movie I've ever seen. Because Kitty, do you know which one I'm talking about?
Which one is this?
Heart of Darkness, A Filmmaker's Apocalypse.
I don't know if I've seen that.
It's about the making of Apocalypse Now. And
I haven't actually seen that. I think it was on like one of my lists of I will eventually see this.
because everything was fucked, because what happened was Martin Sheen kept on getting dysentery. It was like Oregon Trail, but making a movie. What?
I was the second you said dysentery, I was like immediately thinking how I could work in Oregon Trail, and you beat me to it.
And actually, Martin Sheen actually got so drunk once that he started punching mirrors in his hotel room until he like bloodied up his fist.
Shit.
And like for a week they had to shoot, you know, Martin Sheen making sure they don't show his bloodied fist, his scarred up fist, until it healed. And everyone knows about Marlon Brando and how they had to shoot around him.
Marlon Brando and his love of not working.
Well, what happened was Marlon, they said, okay, Marlon, you have to weigh 180 pounds for us to start shooting, and you have to have read the actual book Heart of Darkness to get the character and the mindset. He shows up weighing like 240 and not reading the book and being like, fuck you guys.
I've heard that was the case in every movie he was in. It was like, okay, we're going to shoot Superman. Yeah, maybe, you know, you could shoot a briefcase or something, because, I mean, Kryptonians are aliens, right? They don't have to be, like, human and stuff, so maybe I just made my son human to send him to this, so you can just, you know, shoot a briefcase and I'll just dub over it. It's like...
Yeah, when you watch that movie, he's kind of, like, glancing around when he's talking, and what he's doing is he's got his lines on note cards all over the set, and he's reading... Because he doesn't like to read the script. He likes to read it as he's doing the performance.
That's why he's doing that. The script reads me.
or I just ate a bug.
What are you, on the road or something?
No. That's what he says in Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, and that
he was doing his
and
lines.
That's why in the Animaniacs version, when it's Mr. Director, he's like, "Oh, I ate a bug."
Yes. Yes.
Boy,
but like I said, I so wish that they filmed 8mm footage of Ralph Bakshi making Lord of the Rings, because that would make a great documentary like Heart
and
of Darkness.
And then they could do high contrast on it and paint it.
But you get my point, because it would be so funny seeing like all these horse riders that they like put these weird helmets on, saying, "Okay, you're gonna ride from here to here. We're gonna shoot it. You're gonna be orcs."
Here's this gigantic New Yorker with this impossible lisp telling them what to do.
Yeah, that's one thing we forgot to mention. Ralph Bakshi, the man with the worst lisp in the world. But I know it feels like we're shitting on Bakshi, but we really aren't. It's more of a product of like Kitty Hawk said, his disinterest the longer it went.
Well, it seems like they were just like, I'm reading up on it. It seems like there were budget problems, and it was obvious they couldn't do all three books. It seems like there's just bad planning from the beginning, and that's partly his fault and partly the studio's fault. Because the studio was thinking, this guy did Fritz the Cat, there's going to be no problems. And they decided to pull the strings later, probably. And he decided to do this crazy thing of, let's do the whole thing rotoscoped, and we're going to Spain to film this. So it's pretty... And I know that Spain was cheap at the time. Like, I'm not going to say, like, ooh, you went to an exotic location. But still, like, shooting all of it and then rotoscoping it seems like... it seems like it's a good idea at first, but I can imagine, like, later on you're like, oh, fuck, we gotta...
I have all this film.
Yeah, I have all this film, and
they
I
basically
also...
did
oh,
the
no.
movie two times. They shoot the yeah. movie two times. First, they shoot the movie, and then they animated the movie. They made two entire movies.
Exactly, and that's why this is was a quagmire. This is just basically bad planning, wasted money, and also the fact that I think there might have been, like, listening to him talk, you talk about the fear and loathing thing, this might have been just Bakshi wanting to do it so he could get there first, because it's obvious that Kubrick wanted to do it, and there were several other people interested
the
in doing
Beatles
it.
Wanted to
exactly.
do it. Yeah.
So
Leonard Nimoy wanted to do it really badly.
Yeah.
He wanted to be Aragorn.
Yeah.
And he wanted to be do it so badly he sang a little musical ditty.
Yeah, so it's obvious that, like, what this was is this is like it's probably Bakshi wanted to be there first, the studio was stupid, he was stupid, everyone around them was just being stupid, and this is what you get. At least it shipped. At least, you know, we can say this. At least it shipped. It could, yeah.
He met one of the three pirate tenants that, you know, real artists ship.
Yeah, exactly. He shipped. And you know what? Bravo, you shipped. I mean, it could have been, like, we were talking about an unreleased film like the
Don Quixote.
Like, yeah, that or The Thief and the Cobbler. I mean, The Thief and the Cobbler is gorgeous as fuck. It is certainly some of the best animation I've ever seen. It's unfinished.
Apple or peach?
Huh?
Bad joke.
Ugh.
Took a second for everybody,
I
but
got
it's,
it.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is like, it just basically comes down to he shipped despite all his problems, and we're talking about it, and people know what we're talking about, rather than if you say Thief and the Cobbler, people go, what the fuck is that? I know what it is. You know what it is. But yeah.
Yes.
And everyone out there knows what the Lord of the Rings movie is. You say that Lord of the Rings animated movie. Oh God, that thing. Ah! At least they know. At least they know.
And you cannot even compare it to stuff like, for instance, Dungeons and Dragons, the movie.
Oh. Yes.
Jeremy Irons.
I know. So at least, hey, it's better than that.
There was a way in there. But it's you know, I think we were a little harsh on it, but it's I gotta say that if you actually have the time to watch the backs, you have to see at least once in your life, and be prepared to laugh when the Balrog shows up, because Lord knows I did.
Make yourself a pot of coffee when you do it too, because I've never made it through this movie.
Well, Neil, what you should have done was, like, have a knife taped to your hand, and every time you fall asleep, the knife falls into your lap, and you're like, okay, I'm awake.
Okay. I know you just hit on it. You just said coffee, which is a drug. We're not doing enough drugs, is obviously what's going on. Since my theory is that everybody on Earth was on drugs prior to 1980, that explains everything. We're not on enough drugs. Obviously,
that's it. That makes sense.
Yes!
Just
backcountry.
Just picture it. I mean, like, dude, this terrible monster, man. It's called the Balrog. He says it's shiny. It's scary as hell, man.
I know. If you were doing acid and you were watching that Balrog scene, I guarantee anyone seeing that is going to be freaking the fuck out.
He's coming after me, man.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, I'm changing it. Bakshi, I have obviously not done enough drugs in order to watch your movies. I will, maybe one day I will remedy this. I'm probably going to die because I'm going to have to do that many.
You're gonna have to find a high school chemistry teacher that's operating out of an RV.
No, better yet, I have to find the ashes of Hunter S. Thompson. What are left, and I have to consume them because that's the only way I can get that much drugs. Yes. Speaking of
Hunter
S. Thompson,
we're back country.
Exactly.
Bakshi country.
Bakshi country. Yes.
And you know what? I gotta say that I've seen both interpretations of Hunter S. Thompson, and I gotta say that Johnny Depp's is better than Bill Murray's.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, Johnny Depp is a good actor. I just wish he picked better things.
There was only one good scene in the Bill Murray version, you know, where the buffalo roam, where, you know, fuck the damned.
That movie is like, it's not good. It's
I know, but that's the only scene that's good.
It's the only scene that's good. But I think
fuck the damned.
I think it was just because, like, I think Fear and Loathing just gets a little better just because the drug imagery does actually help, and also Johnny Depp, he spent a lot of time around Hunter S. Thompson before he did that.
He actually stole that cigarette holder from Hunter because Hunter was because when Hunter watched it, he was like, I was wondering where that thing went.
Yeah. God. I miss that man. I miss him so much. I miss reading his article.
Well, you have him animated with tits.
Yes, exactly. We do. Well, now he doesn't have tits right now.
We can go back to an earlier episode.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, anyways, this episode was mostly about Lord of the Rings. This is your host, Ben.
With TV's Rich Neal.
Kitty Hawk of Sparkling Generation, Valkyrie Yuki, SGBY.com, your one-stop shop for sexy fun.
And this is Paolo Price.
Yay. And we're saying goodnight.
Bye. Night.
In the middle of the earth, in the land of Shire, lives a brave little hobbit whom we all admire. With his long wooden pipe, fuzzy woolly toes, he lives in a hobbit hole and everybody knows him. Bilbo, Bilbo Baggins, he's only 3 feet tall. Bilbo, Bilbo Baggins, the bravest little hobbit of them all. Now hobbits are peace-loving folks, you know. They're never in a hurry and they take things slow. They don't like to travel away from home. They just like to eat and be left alone. But one day Bilbo was asked to go on a big adventure to the caves below to help some dwarves get back their gold that was stolen by a dragon in the days of old. Bilbo, Bilbo Baggins, only 3 feet tall. Bilbo, Bilbo Baggins, the bravest little hobbit of them all. Well, he fought with the goblins. He battled a troll. He riddled with Gollum. A magic ring he stole. He was chased by wolves, lost in the forest, escaped in a barrel from the Elf King's halls. Bilbo, Bilbo Baggins, the bravest little hobbit of them all. Home in the land of Shire, that brave little hobbit whom we all admire, just sitting on a treasure of silver and gold, a puffin' on his pipe in his hobbit hole. Bilbo,